Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, we talk about Freo and West Coast big wins, who won the Clarko Chris Scott duel, and an update on all the injuries.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh! The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, listeners. Tuesday morning, time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. The first edition this week is brought to you by Tab Touch. With me in the studio here, Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer at the West Australian. Quarters, round three. A couple of big results.
Action-packed on the field and action-packed off the field. And that doesn't even just relate to off the field, also just off the field at the outside of the boundary line. Lots going on.
So, mate, I was working like a Trojan on Sunday afternoon when the drama went down.
So was I.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. Yeah, you were doing high rep bicep curls in a corporate box downstairs.
Well, look, mate, I've just got to get it's a new stadium. I've got to see it from all angles.
So, was it from the horizontal angle?
It's a good vantage point from where we were. It's a very highly entertaining game.
So where were you?
A game of many personalities. We were at the station end, sort of half forward flank.
Okay.
And a good vantage point and extraordinary game in terms of probably played in three parts of the West Coast Geelong game.
One of the more dramatic games I have seen in recent years, I have to say. I thought West Coast were superb till half time. I thought Geelong was superb and West Coast pretty much flummoxed in the third quarter. And then, of course, when Ablett went down and Geelong were down to 19 fit men and they ran out of petrol and only had fumes left for about the last 10 minutes, and West Coast smelt the blood in the water and really, really surged and finished right over the top of them.
Concern for me was the third quarter when Geelong was, for the best part of it, two men down and were able to get the game on their terms. That was the concern for me, but I guess three down from the last quarter, from reasonably early in the last quarter, they won it and they won it well. It was one of the more memorable wins for West Coast, the way it was won. But you have to put the asterisks there, given Geelong's personnel.
A little bit of an asterisk, but I think a lot of games now are won because the game is on your terms. Mm-hmm. You know, like every club has a slightly different style and a slightly different persona, and the club that gets the game played the way they want it played tends to win. I mean, yeah, at Geelong, you can't ignore the fact that Geelong barely had a rotation to make in that last quarter. And I reckon watching the game quarters, you could see the moment when they ran out of oxygen.
Yeah, you could.
It was like, I think there was a turnover somewhere in the midfield, and West Coast, and to West Coast credit, and this is what I do give them absolute credit for, they smelt blood.
Yep.
They knew.
Which hasn't been the case in the past.
No,
it was a good sign. And I think the lack of a ruckman too is very significant, particularly late. And anyone who wants to bag the media or bag Nick Nat for his influence needs to have a look at the last quarter of that game just to see. You only have to look at the stats of when he's on the field this season so far, the significant role he plays.
Yeah, I reckon I might write a column on this because they always debate the worth of ruckman. Because their stats, they don't get the mountain of stats that midfielders do, and they debate the worth of hit-outs and all that sort of stuff. You look at Fremantle's win-loss with and without Aaron Sandilands, and you look at West Coast with and without Nick
Manley. I reckon they're 56 points plus when he's on the field this year and about 15, minus 15 when he's not this year so far. But just it's a good point that because Martin, Grundy, Gawn, big influences so far this year. McAvoy, big influences so far this year.
Well, they've been decisive influences in games, haven't they? Gawn, really, all but won round one for Melbourne.
Martin the same for Brisbane last week against Port in Adelaide. It was arguably the best game from a ruckman I've seen in a long time.
Grundy was super against Carlton on Friday night.
He was.
And we've already talked about Nat Nui and Sandilands at West Coast and Fremantle. So it is a big year for ruckman, making a big comeback. And I think the other side of that quarter, the flip side of that is God help Richmond if Nankervis goes down.
Yeah, look, yes, that's fair, yes. But I was impressed with Richmond. I thought my boys, the Hawks, I took a bit away from that game, given that we should have lost that by 40-odd points, lost it by 13. But that pressure from Richmond, it's still there. They're going to take some beating again this year, and I walked away from that very impressed with the Tigers. They've lost no intent.
You know what I take away from that game?
What?
Coaches should be very careful before they wade into the politics
around Puopolo.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, like, if nothing else, and I give Clarko an out because he did say, you know, he talked about Selwood and he's...
Spoke about Puopolo
as well. So-called 10 concussions.
Yeah.
And obviously he mentioned, well, we've got a couple, you know, Puopolo does it too. But you know what happens? Puopolo does that, and because Clarkson said what he said, Puopolo doesn't just get tackled. He gets flattened. He gets jumped on.
I don't reckon there was much of a... I know Puopolo doesn't. I'm not disputing that. But I think the one that we're talking about, I don't think there was a duck there. I think he was just got around the neck. I think it was just a high tackle. It was a free kick every day of the week.
He drops at the knees.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there was that much in that one.
Go watch it in slow motion.
I have.
He drops at the knees.
But he does do that. He's one of the main culprits of that. I'll admit that. But I just thought at the weekend it wasn't a great example.
Yeah, I thought he dropped at the knees. It was going to be one across the chest. Ended up being high. It's one of those ones that it's really, really hard for the umpires.
It is hard for the umpires, yeah.
To adjudicate. And the thing... My point with Clarko is that, so Richmond go after Puopolo and immediately the free kick is paid. You know, you ducked. Mm. They're all over him. There's a melee. Cyril Rioli runs in. He ends up getting flattened and like really got monstered on the ground by Richmond. Richmond went after him as well. You basically invite this stuff.
Yes, you do. And
when you're a coach and there are plenty of people. There are ad nauseum football shows and football commentators now. There are plenty of people who can comment as to whether the ducking thing. I reckon coaches have to be careful when they wade into this.
Well, I think Clarko sees himself as an elder statesman now, and he's probably earned that right to a large degree, but I think he's got to be careful with his facts when he enters the arena of debate, because he got a bit of that wrong at the weekend.
Well, Chris Scott and Alistair Clarkson are quite close and have a healthy respect for each other, and Chris Scott was very quick to take umbrage to the suggestion that Selwood ducking into tackles had led to 10 concussions. So I think, it's a bit of one you've got to be pretty careful of. So, Quarters, what was your performance of the weekend for you?
Performance of the weekend for me was probably Fremantle. I think it was a bit of a statement. Interesting comments from Ross Lyon. You know, he never thought they were behind on the scoreboard.
I love that.
I still don't have them in my eight, but they're on the way. And I just thought the way Gold Coast was the number one tackling team in the comp. They were number one contested possession team in the competition entering that round. Fremantle smashed them in contested possessions. I just like the way Fremantle's going about it. And I think there's going to be a lot of ups for them this year. For me, that was a bit of a statement. Got challenged, came back. It was on their home ground, but for me, that was a really good statement with an exclamation mark on the end from Freo.
I like what I've seen from Fremantle since round one, and any win for Fremantle this year will be a good win. I'm not elevating them significantly up the ladder on the basis of that. I think the contested possession tackle stats at Gold Coast were skewed quite significantly by the fact they played underwater in round one against North Melbourne up in North Queensland.
So they played underwater. And St Kilda is still the lowest scoring team in the competition this year, notwithstanding those two teams in round one.
Okay, let's get on to the Saints, because I think we saw where the Western Bulldogs answer the challenge and really play in support of their coach. We saw Collingwood answer the challenge and play in support of their coach.
Mm.
We didn't see much of a response from the Saints, I didn't think, after what they were copying last week.
They did answer the critics and respond for their coach, albeit against opposition. Well, particularly in from the Essendon point of view, I thought they were very poor. But there was no answer from St Kilda, you're quite right. And 7 goals from 50-odd inside 50s, clearly there's a dysfunctional forward line that needs to be addressed there. That's their number one issue. But, well, that's their number two issue, because the number one issue right now is their intent and want for the ball. Clearly it's not there.
Yeah, and a dysfunctional forward line can be a product of not having good forwards, or can be a product of having a mediocre midfield.
Not sure they're working hard enough either. That seems to me to be the case.
I think, who is the A-grader in St Kilda's midfield?
Well, Stevens is the one who comes to mind. I don't think he's...
Is he A grade?
He's on the cusp, but he's not there yet.
Yeah, so...
Maybe Billings will be. We're expecting him to be. I don't know, Membry, Akers are possibles. I don't think McCartan will ever get there. Membry's injured at the moment. But there's a real problem. Now, they reloaded, what, 2014? They said they were... It was the three-year plan to make the top four and then they'd win the flag the year after. Well, they're nowhere near that. They didn't make the four last year, so.
So where do you have them?
Well, I had St Kilda ninth from memory, ninth or tenth. And
where would you put them now?
I'd put them 14th, 15th, somewhere down there, maybe even lower the way they're going at the moment. Yeah. What about you?
No, I agree with that. I think that based on what we've seen so far, St Kilda is probably bottom four. And I had them, I think I had them 10th and I had the Bulldogs 9th. And the Dogs were encouraging, I think. You know, I wouldn't say any more than encouraging, but they were encouraging.
I didn't think they had much to beat, to be honest.
Okay, well, let's get on to Essendon then. I had Essendon in my 8.
I had Essendon in my 8. I had them top 5.
We've seen them against Fremantle in Perth, and they were probably lucky to be as close as they were to Fremantle at the end of that one. And then against the Doggies at the weekend. So where's the Essendon defence?
It's not there. There's no defence. That's the problem. They've got to run the other way. I just think and that's something, I don't know if you can change that overnight. They've concentrated a lot on their physical nature over the pre-season, and perhaps as a result their fitness suffered. That could be an issue in running the other way, but they don't chase. They don't, when they haven't got the ball, it's non-existent their defence. They look fantastic when they've got it.
Yep.
But they haven't the last 2 weeks, but that's a real issue. It's something John Worsfold... I almost thought his comments at the weekend were a little mild as to if they don't start listening to the edict, then they'll be out of the side. Well, not start listening. You haven't been listening, clearly.
Yeah, so, and a good call. And another thing that I think is going to hurt Essendon, and this is going to be in play for quite some time, Ross Lyon is really good at identifying the player you should tag in an opposition team. And it's not always the one
good, yep.
You think you should tag. He picks out the one that can put the biggest dent in the opposition's midfield output.
Aaron Hall.
I'll get on to Aaron Hall. But he picks Zach Merritt against Essendon.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Merritt got tagged again at the weekend, got monstered.
Yeah, twice now, yeah.
And he had the ball 10 or 11 times, I think, on the weekend. Had a very moderate game for Zach Merritt. So Ross picks Aaron Hall on the weekend. So Zach Merritt will get tagged probably for the rest of the year.
Well, the problem is when you get tagged and your toes go up a bit, as Aaron Hall's did at the weekend, you're going to get tagged every week. That's you're creating a real rod for your back, so you really got to have a crack out there.
It was a very telling comment from Stuart Dew on the weekend.
It was.
Where he paid a lot of credit to Bailey Banfield for his game on Aaron Hall.
And the rich man's Brian Crowley.
And he didn't actually have much to say about Aaron Hall's response to it. So I think that... I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron Hall is not in the 22 this week.
Really? I would have thought he would be with holding a giant-sized rocket, I would suggest.
I reckon, I don't know, watch this space. When you go missing like he went, I mean, 5 touches for a midfielder for an entire game.
Yeah, it's not good enough.
They basically hit him deep forward for a lot of the game.
Mm.
It was pretty telling, and I wonder how telling it will be at selection during the course of the week.
Good call.
Let's get on to a couple of questions, Quarters, and then we'll do some injury concerns, I think, for the local teams. Good mate, Riley Stewart, who is Sydney-based, is asking, do you think GWS rolls the dice with Dawson Simpson this week? Obviously, Rory Lobb suffered the knee injury in the Sydney Derby.
Finished the game. You would... probably err on the side of the caution and say he's not playing, and they do, but geez, they're in the NAFL. I'm not sure if they've been setting the game alight. It's a big call.
Strong-bodied ruckman, I reckon, will be handy.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Sandilands obviously gets off with the fine. Now, I think that was the right call by the MRO. You're not so sure?
By Sandy?
Yeah.
I'm just concerned. Look, as you pointed out, he did finish the game and but 30 touches, so there was not a great deal of hurt there. But I think it's either you whack him in the head or you don't. I'm not sure. I think there are confused signals out there. I expected him to get some time.
Yeah, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I always defer to Craig O'Donoghue, my colleague, who's a former umpire, studies the tribunal system very closely. Once he'd watched a replay of that, I turned to him and I said, what do you reckon? And he said, that's a fine.
Yeah, and I preface it by saying that Sandy's one of the fairer players. I think he's I don't think there's any malice in the bloke's body at all. But I saw him run back to that centre bounce, shaking his head a bit. And I think he looked a little bit concerned to me. And I thought he had reason, but good on him. He's off. I'm glad he's playing this week.
Okay, so I would, if I was GWS, I would go with a strong-bodied ruckman against Aaron. I would put Dawson Simpson in.
Didn't do a lot wrong last week. I know there are concerns about certain aspects of GWS's play, but they lost by 16 to Sydney at the SCG. Haven't done too much wrong this year.
Yeah, now I wrote a column on him, which is probably what you're referring to. And all I'm saying is that I think that they have so much upside. And I'm not sure, unless they get a kick in the teeth at some point, they're going to explore that upside.
It's a good point. They're not going to be afforded that opportunity because they're never going to be that bad. They're always going to be a pretty good team. And sometimes you need to have that awful moment where you have to look yourself in the mirror and change a few things. But, yeah, they're pretty close.
That definitely happened with Brisbane in 2001. That was the turning point for the Lions, and that turned them into the juggernaut that they became.
Well, it probably happened in a certain way to Hawthorn too, post-2008, I would suggest too. And look, we've got those two teams. So
when was the moment for the Hawks, do you think? Obviously, they missed the finals in 2009.
Oh, I reckon 2009 is probably the year. But then they had a couple of years where they did make the finals. And look, it might have even been the preliminary final loss to Collingwood. It was a very close game, but I think they had to lose a few to really look themselves in the mirror to become the side. They're probably in many ways similar to where GWS is at because that really talented side but I think they did have a couple of kicks in the teeth, Hawthorn, and it meant that when they won a flag, they didn't lose the hunger to win another.
So another question from Ben Cameron. Why did Adam Simpson let Ablett run off halfback for a quarter on Sunday? Well, he didn't really run off halfback. His start point was behind the ball at the centre bounce, and then basically Ablett was playing high half forward, but he certainly was instrumental in a lot of their counter attacks, and West Coast did struggle to cope with that.
Would you have travelled after 6 days? Would you have let him travel?
I think the problem with Gaz is the role. I think he's determined to play midfield. I reckon that.
Do you think he was chasing kicks out of position?
Look, I just think that if I was Chris Scott, I would be earmarking Gary Ablett to play either that role or
high half forward.
Yeah, and with bursts into the midfield, I would have Patrick Dangerfield absolutely earmarked as 90% midfield, 10% forward.
He was good when it counted at the weekend again.
And he was good in the last quarter against Hawthorn.
Yeah, he was.
And their power from the midfield comes from Patrick Dangerfield. I thought Sam Menegola was wonderful for them on the weekend.
He was, yep.
The only guy that kept him in it till halftime and then was still good when Ablett and Dangerfield lifted alongside him in the third quarter. But, yeah, there's a bit of the big guns running the show about Geelong still.
Absolutely. Well, always going to be the case.
Yeah, and I think
you strip it back below that surface and it looks pretty average.
I think Chris Scott needs to say, okay, you're back here, you're playing for us, you're playing forward because that's where we need you and that's where you're physically capable of playing. And I think he needs to say to Dangerfield, we still want you to kick 25 to 30, but we need you in the midfield and we need you being that powerhouse midfielder surging out of stoppages.
There's an interesting parallel between Geelong and Hawthorn at the weekend. Both teams very flat in the first half after that really brutal Easter Monday game. I expected that to be the case.
Yep.
Took a half of footy to get them running again, but they were really flat, both teams, I thought.
Yeah, and just getting back to West Coast in that game, I mean, West Coast first half, that was as good a footy as West Coast has played for a considerable amount of time.
Two players I'll talk about. One is Shepherd, who I thought was consistent throughout.
Yep.
And Jack Darling. So Jack Darling, as we've said in the past, has copped his whack because everyone expects him to be a Josh Kennedy every week. But he kicks two or three every week. He does his job. And he's been very good in the first three rounds and was very good again at the weekend.
I'll throw another one in their quarters. And it's because, I mean, Liam Ryan's been terrific and Willie Rioli showed some really good signs on the weekend. They tend to be headline grabbers. Jake Waterman,
yes,
and I've mentioned him a number of times, he gets where the team needs him to be, and he does it consistently. He's a real workhorse. He was terrific linking up. He sort of like played that Tom Lynch role. You know,
yes, he did.
Adelaide's Tom Lynch I'm talking about. Yeah. The guy that links the midfield to the forward line. He did that for half a game on the weekend. I reckon he's been really, really good.
We should probably talk about Gold Coast Tom Lynch too and the guy who played on him.
Alex Pearce.
Has had a good three rounds, and I reckon, I know it's early, so please don't let's not get carried away, but if you picked your All-Australian side now, he'd be there at centre-half-back.
Well, he's played on Charlie Dixon, Joe Danaher, and Tom Lynch.
Two goals in total?
Two goals in three games. Mm. On that trifecta, that is one hell of a comeback from two broken legs.
It is a hell of a comeback, and off a long absence. That's not easy to do.
And what he does, he plays, as they call it these days, assertive defence. And because he plays that way, a little like Nat Nui in the midfield for West Coast, he enables Luke Ryan, Nathan Wilson, Stephen Hill to really get on the front foot and really give Fremantle some serious bounce out of the back end. And because they're getting that bounce, they're forward to getting better looks. And lo and behold, Cam McCarthy bobs up on the weekend and kicks three, and Fremantle kicked 100 points against Essendon in round two, and they should have, but for inaccurate kicking, they would have kicked 100 points against Gold Coast.
Aren't they getting the benefit of a fit Michael Walters and Nathan Wilson's presence in the back half, just the delivery into attack? They're getting a real benefit from that.
And, of course, the elephant in the corner of the room that we haven't mentioned yet, it was Nathan Fyfe's game on Saturday, was 2015 vintage Nathan Fyfe.
He wasn't an elephant, that's for sure. He's anything but.
Well, he was big.
Yeah, he was big.
He was a big influence on the game.
Yeah, he was. He was. But that's, I guess, that's what we expect from him, which is a bit harsh on him, but that's what we expect.
Yep, no.
He sets a very high bar.
Okay, so what changed in your perception of how the season will play out as a result of what you saw on the weekend?
Well, the only thing that changed was I've always said I'll go a month before I make any definitive assessments, but that's just not going to be. This season is going to have a couple of moments. This season is going to turn itself upside down a couple of times. It's going to be a very even season.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be upsets every weekend. So I still rate Sydney very highly. I still think Sydney will be right there at the chop-up at the end. Nothing has changed my opinion on them. I've got real question marks on Essendon now.
Yep.
That would probably be the one thing. I don't think I had St Kilda in the eight. You know, I didn't have the Dogs in the eight. I had Hawthorn thereabouts. I think Hawthorn might be able to push into the eight, possibly at the bottom end of it.
Yep.
But I have real concerns about Essendon now. I thought there wasn't that disparity between the defence and attack. I thought it was there. The defensive mechanisms, but there's just nothing there. It really concerns me. That would be the big thing to come out of the weekend for me, apart from the fact that we've got one hell of a season ahead of us.
Our zone defence is in trouble. A lot of teams bring the ball back into the middle. That is the hardest point to set up a zone defence for, and really that kick back into the middle now has become a priority kick, I reckon, in the AFL. I reckon the zone defence, and not just the zone defence, but I reckon the zone defenders are in trouble. I'm not sure that Hurley's having the impact at Essendon. I'm not sure that McGovern is having the impact at West Coast, and I'm not sure Lever is having the impact at Melbourne. Those roll-off defenders that become the third man up, when you attack through the middle, the opposition has so many options on where to kick the ball.
Yep.
There's always two or three, and that roll-on, roll-off defender is the one that has the hardest job working out where to go.
Apart from Rance at the weekend, who Hawthorn obviously were told to kick it to him. fair credit to those Hawthorn midfielders. They've done a fair job in the half forwards, but there were some pretty dumb kicks inside 50 at the weekend.
So I reckon we're going to see a mix between zone defence and man to man defence. And I reckon the power defender,
not a bad thing.
No, I like it. Mm. I like the one on one.
So do I.
The one on one battles and it helps you really accurately assess a player, doesn't it? One of the reasons why we've gotten a great handle on Alex Pearce's first 3 weeks is because he plays on a
exactly, and that's a lot of people used to go to the footy to see those contests. And I'm not a romantic in that I know that there were crappy games in the 70s. There were many of them, but there were some great one-on-one battles, and we missed that to a certain extent.
Yeah,
and we used to go to the footy to see, you know, Peter Knight's play on Paul Vanderhaar.
Yeah, okay, quick one. Stephen Martin, his game as a ruckman Is that the best game played by a ruckman this year so far?
Yes. No, and then daylight second. And there have been some magnificent games played by Grundy, by McAvoy, by in burst Nick Nat, by Sandilands. That was daylight second. I just think it was a complete game, not just from his work at the stoppages, but for his work around the ground. And he, more than anyone, there's a lot to like about Brisbane, but he, more than anyone, nearly willed that side over the line.
And there's a fair bit of defensive generalling going on by some bloke who used to run around in grand finals and play pretty well, some guy called Hodge.
Yes, there is, and there's a bit about the Hawthorn about Brisbane too, and good on him. That's what he's there for. And well played, Brisbane, and he was always going to fill that role. But I think it's a win-win. I think Hawthorn's back line is developing as well as a result of him leaving that group.
Okay, the fence at Optus Stadium, two cut hands,
well,
freak occurrence or a problem?
I think it needs to be looked at. Obviously, all the LED, it's the same all around Australia. That fence is a tad higher, I'm led to believe, a tad higher than the others.
So they don't put, the row one of the seating is basically more than a metre above ground level.
So you can't run and put your hands on top. Your hands have to go into it. Perhaps that's an issue. And new LED. So apparently the new displays are quite sharp.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they can do about it. Is the fence closer to the boundary line?
I wouldn't have thought so. No.
Okay, because I thought that was a consideration too. But they clearly have to look at it. I think the athletes, they deserve to be out there without fear of running into a fence and injuring themselves. But you know, we need the advertising, so it's a tough one. I think they need to look at some form of protection for the players, though.
Okay, umpires bouncing the ball badly. Should we just be done with the bounce?
No.
One at the start of every quarter.
Yes, one at the start of every quarter and then throw it up the rest of the time. I've said this all along. I love the bounce to start a quarter, but then just throw it up.
Yep.
And you take that element out of it.
So put the best bouncer in there.
Yep.
Why do the umpires... They seem to be adamant they're going to rotate the duties. I mean, I'm sure one of the three can bounce the ball.
Yeah, just give it to the best to bounce start each quarter. It's not rocket science. Score review.
Oh, I like the score review. I hate the way the score review is being implemented.
Yes, and if it's a...
Look, the classic example, I reckon, was the Tommy Hawkins touched.
It was. It doesn't need to be a score review.
The umpire has called it touched.
It's touched.
The replay is not going to show you definitively either way. Back the umpire in.
And most of the players out there, the body language suggests that it was too.
Yeah.
I think the score reviews are there for really difficult ones on the line. That's what they're there for. I don't think we need to use it all the time. We're still working our way through it.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely with you there. All right. We're going to be back later in the week. Quarter, some big challenges for our teams or the WA teams this weekend. Fremantle go to GWS to play Gold Coast. We should also mention we're waiting as we speak for injury updates on Liam Ryan and his ankle.
So, Liam, it looks like a lengthy stint. One thing I will say is it's a lengthy stint, which is no good. I was really concerned it was an ACL. From my vantage point, I couldn't see the ankle roll. So I've got to say, I was probably the only one at the venue that was happy to see him with ice around his ankle at the end of the game. Not sure if Simo was that happy about him doing a victory lap.
The lap of honour, going over to see the family on the other side of the ground.
But having said that, you know, look, he's worked really hard to get where he is. And I was saying to someone at the weekend, wasn't it great when he's kicked the goal on his turnaround? There's 55,000 there as opposed to, you know, a couple of thousand perhaps at a waffle game.
That stadium was cranking.
It was. It was great, great noise. Really, really good amphitheatre at the weekend.
Yeah. When the leg folded up underneath him, I must admit, I was thinking knee. Then when we saw the ankle, we thought, well, maybe not too bad. But Adam Simpson talking lengthy update. I went to Fremantle training this morning. Sean Darcy, the young Fremantle ruckman, big brace on the knee. They're adamant it's not an ACL.
I've heard ACL, PCL.
I'm getting the feeling maybe PCL.
Mm-hmm.
And PCL can sometimes be something they can fix quickly, and sometimes it's something like Scott Lysette's PCL, which wipes him out for a year.
Well, let's hope he's not, but if he is, the meek shall inherit the earth when Sandy needs a rest.
Yeah, don't rule out Scott Jones, the other ruckman at Peel. He played a lot of senior footy at East Perth last year. He's played mainly as a forward because of the presence of Darcy and Meek at Peel this year. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the one. And, you know, the guy that's actually going to be going, well, you know, for every bad break, there's a good break. Luke Stranatic has been running around in the twos at Peel, so he may get a chance to actually play some senior footy and take his football a step forward. Brad Hill not sighted on the track this weekend, this morning. So whether he makes it back into Fremantle's team, not too sure as yet. We'll be back on Thursday with all the previews of the upcoming rounds. Obviously, West Coast to face Gold Coast at Optus Stadium on Saturday night, and Fremantle travelling to Canberra to play GWS. Going to be a big round for our teams. Hopefully they can start pushing themselves into the contention for the top eight conversation. We'll see you on Thursday for Tab Touch.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.